You're listening to the Music Manumit Podcast for October 1st, 2010. Learn more at musicmanumit.com. Hi, and welcome to another Music Manumit. I'm Tom, and with me, as always, is Doug.
Hey.
How are you today?
I'm all right.
Yeah? Good. It sounded like you had to think about it a little.
Interesting times. So,
really?
But not, I mean...
Not interesting enough to let me in on what you're talking about? What?
Well, you may know this. I'm sure most of our listeners don't know this, but my employer has this gigantic conference where 5,500 customers, at least that was the number this year, come and infiltrate our campus. And we have 4,000 employees, so the campus is not really designed for that many people. And the team that I work on is, I wouldn't say responsible for the event, but we are a major component of the most important parts of the event. And a significant, we play a significant role in the entire thing. You know, so it's the tech team, it's a conference, there's a million people with PowerPoints and internet stuff and, you know, everything like that. So, and my team is kind of responsible for routing 911 calls as well. Not really routing, but because the phones, you know, are location-based, there's a lot of that sort of stuff that we end up having to do that we don't normally do. It's just a hectic, frantic week. And there are people that are basically employed to work on this conference year-round. And people on my team work on it for, you know, they start having meetings, you know, in like May or something. I'm making that month up, but May,
just to give
June,
us a little bet.
May, June, July, something like that. I'm not that heavily involved in it, but
you're just one of the monkeys that they tell to do things.
Well, in this particular instance, more or less, that's the case. Yeah. This year was more complex than other years for a variety of reasons. But one thing, getting us back to music here, is that our theme this year, it's always themed. Which is interesting. Last year, it was a Western theme. The year before that, which is the first year I worked there.
Wait, Western, like cowboy hats and stuff, you mean Western?
Yes.
And, wow.
And then, you should come check out the campus sometime. There's remnants of these past UGMs. The UGM is user group meeting. All around campus. And the year before that, it was Shakespeare, which I wasn't so much into the Shakespeare, but I do like the fact that it was Shakespeare and the company is based in Verona. So it was easy to make some Romeo and Juliet. References there. But this year it was musicals. So I don't know how much of that, if any of it, is in the public domain. Probably not a whole lot of it.
Musicals? No, I highly doubt that.
Yeah.
If anything was probably renewed copyright wise, it would probably be musicals. I'm assuming. Truthfully, I can't speak.
Yeah, because
you know,
I guess
for sure,
like,
on that.
But I mean, when did musicals really start on Broadway? I mean, obviously, opera's been around for like 400 years or 500.
Truthfully, my only knowledge of musicals is when I started realizing that people were singing in Disney films as I was growing up. That's really my background in musicals. Other than that, I don't have too much knowledge about them.
So we could go off on a tangent on this,
Go ahead.
Well, I want to go slightly down this tangent, but not too far. I just want to say that in college, undergraduate work, I actually took a class called Music and Culture. Sounds like a, you know, freaking awesome title for a class. You know, you learn about like punk and whatever sort of like society and culture things might be going on. And maybe there's some like anthropology or something cool like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we spent the entire class, and I don't know that I can emphasize entire enough, you know, so an entire semester on one wedding.
Wow.
In Florence. Yeah. So this is why that I know that, you know, opera has been around for 400 years, because the Medicis, which were, you know, like big people in Italy back in the day, in Florence specifically, they had these things called intermedi, I-N-T-E-R-M-E-D-I-I. And they were supposed to be like, I guess like intermissions, but they sort of became this, they sort of took over. They're just like, I don't know how many, it was like days of wedding celebrations and like months of rehearsals for these things. But it was out of intermedi that the opera formed. So
opera was an intermission?
Well, so intermedi was different than an opera. And it, and as intermedi sort of became into its own, it became what is opera, more or less.
Well, that's interesting.
So that wedding was in 1589 was that like the big sort of to-do wedding that we studied for for those 3 or 4 months, however long the semester was. And then the first opera is, according to Wikipedia, have been produced in Florence, same city, around 1597. So 8 years later is when the first opera was. But it's sort of like,
do you think it took them that long just to figure out what they were going to do, or do you think it just didn't catch on? That's really weird that it would take that long.
I guess you got to think about like the way genres work. I mean, when did heavy metal start? You know, are you talking like Inagata De Vita? You know, that was in the 60s. Are we talking Led Zeppelin? Are we talking Judas Priest? Are we talking Black Sabbath? I mean, what is the hallmark of metal? Where do you draw that line?
Well, if you watch Decline of the Western Civilization Part 2, The Metal Years, supposedly it came from the line Heavy Metal Thunder from Born to Be Wild. That is where they claim it happened. Just a little knowledge on my part.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you asked about metal.
Yeah, so it's not 1968. So, you know, I think most people probably say, I mean, metal's heyday was in the 80s. You know.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, but I think it's safe to say.
Or it didn't become really defined until the 80s, or people didn't really start calling their stuff metal until the 80s. I'll say. Just like, what would you determine, when did grunge come around, which is essentially just metal and punk fused together? And most people would say when Nirvana came out. But the thing is I was listening to Nirvana way before they did Smells Like Teen Spirit, you know, so... It's really like, are you going to go by when it was created or by when it became popular or known?
Yeah. Way before? Didn't they just have one album before, or did they have two?
They had, there was Bleach.
Bleach.
And I want to say there was, all I know is that Smells Like Teen Spirit came out when I was a senior in high school. And I was listening to Bleach a couple of years before that, so maybe it was just the length between the two albums, the time length between the two albums. But, I mean, I know that they were around since then, or way before then, and selling albums.
Yeah, so they started in 87. So, yeah, this is what I thought. They released Bleach in 1989, and then Nevermind was 1991. So, I mean, that's two
there
years. I mean, I guess...
Wow, I was actually right on a timeline. Wow.
Yeah. I mean... Yeah, those were the numbers I had in my head, but maybe it was released late in 91 because the Nevermind was nominated for a Grammy in 1992, and for the album, and then Smells Like Teen Spirit was nominated for the Grammy Best Rock Song in 1993. So I guess between that Grammy nomination and their first album was 4 years. I mean, that's a pretty long time.
Yeah.
In popular music.
Right.
So I will not argue with you about that then.
Woo! That's right. Yeah. That's two times I was right on this show. And we just begun. Hey, so this all started out with you talking about this conference. And we got a big conference coming up, and I see a note here that you can't go. I'm talking about Bar Camp Milwaukee. This is going to be my very first bar camp. Well, no, my second bar camp. The first one, I had no idea what the heck it was, and that was a couple of years back.
I am super, super bummed about this.
What's the dealio?
I have made the decision to prioritize some things.
Oh, your school stuff and all that, or whatever you...
Yeah, I can talk to you about that more offline.
That's cool.
Get into that, but
well, we can
really
at least
sucks.
Give a plug for the event, you know. I mean, Bar Camp Milwaukee is
absolutely
going on,
and
we were supposed to do a live podcast from there.
I know. Well, this is what I was thinking. I was thinking that George Soundchaser from Iowa,
yeah,
he's supposed to be there. It might be good, and I don't know. I mean, this is between you and George, but I think it would be cool if you guys just went ahead and like did a joint show there. I was super.
Because he's already got a podcast that he does, right? But it was more, music based, right?
But yeah, I was super excited about meeting him. Mm-hmm. And doing this show, like the whole live thing.
Well, and I know that you sent me out a message too, saying that you were really going to be focusing on some school stuff this week. And then I realized, I was like, oh yeah, are you doing that to get it done?
Well, my plan was to go and just to sort of participate in the really awesome sounding sessions, and then to do our show and just sort of study as needed, but. It's just, I mean, the reality of the situation is I'm going to go down there and talk to people and get nothing done. And, you know, I could, quote unquote, study on the way down to the show, you know, down to Milwaukee. There's no way in hell that I'm going to get 3 hours of good work in on the ride down there. So it's just, you know, it sounded like a good idea. And I was really trying to prepare myself for it. Like, I've taken off vacation days for work and stuff just to have some more time. But as my girlfriend said, it's go time.
Right.
And she's right. You know, I mean, she unlike Bar Camp Madison, which I will never forgive her for making me go to that wedding.
I know.
Unlike that, this was definitely my decision.
Well, it's all right. We've got a couple of things to cover here. You were saying that you wanted to talk about, since it's summer, the Fedora Musician's Guide, or FMG.
Well, basically, it's this one guy's experience for his summer coding project.
Hmm.
And there's a draft on there of what it actually is. So his guy's name is Christopher, and I don't actually know what his last name is. I don't guess.
Antilla, looks like.
So it says the FMG, not to confuse with OMG.
Oh, God.
That was my editor.
Nice.
Currently covers the following software: Audacity, Ardour, Q-Tractor, which I don't know what that is.
Yeah, me neither.
Rose Garden, Fluid Synth, Q-Synth, Super Collider, Lily Pond, Frescobaldi, and GNU Solfège. Now, GNU Solfège is one that my dad mentioned when we interviewed him.
Really?
I don't really know. Ardour and Audacity, I definitely know. Ardour is sort of supposed to be the open source Pro Tools, and Audacity, everybody knows what Audacity is.
Mm-hmm. So this is, I would hope so. I hope we've talked about Audacity enough that everybody knows what it is.
Yeah.
So this is just documentation on different types of recording and sound devices on that are usable and open and available on Fedora.
This is specifically geared towards Fedora.
And it kind of looks like he's created manuals for each of them.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool because manuals are really hard to find for free software.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so it's a little bit off of our sort of beaten path as far as the Creative Commons music. But, you know, if people are trying to record and they don't want to spend, you know, all the money for Pro Tools or I don't know what else is out there really. But it's something to look into. I don't know how much of these other ones. Ardour is on Macs, so mm-hmm. if you're a Mac user, you can use Ardour. Like I said, I don't know about the other ones, but there's something to, to check out if you're sort of looking to get started in recording.
Yeah, and it's not that...
And not just recording, but also editing.
Yeah, and it's not that far off scope, because that's another thing that I think is important, is finding a way that you can use free software to create music and not have to pay for really expensive equipment. And there's a lot of good stuff in here. I recognize a lot of them. Like Rose Garden is a good, good drum machine. Yeah, it's a good list of stuff here. If anything, if you don't go for the manual, it's a great place for looking for sources of different types of recording software. And it even talks about some of the sound card software that works with it and the different types of sound cards. That's a pretty good find. I'm always looking for manuals and other things to use to talk about or to learn more about these type of programs. I love to download any kind of music program and see what it can do if it's free.
And the other thing, I mean, I mentioned the Mac, but we probably, you know, I don't know how many of the Linux folk we've got, you know, listening, but a bunch of these are going to work. The tutorials may not be exactly the same, but all of these are going to work, I would say, on Ubuntu or another Linux system.
Right.
They might not be in the repos, but I don't know. It's just something I call, and I thought it was pretty cool that music was sort of getting a, you know, a fair. I mean, I guess the thing that caught my eye, it was the musicians. It was for music. It's called Musician's Guide. It's not sort of like listening to audio. I mean, a lot of things we talk about are sort of like, here's where you download music, which is cool. I mean, I think that's part of what we're trying to do, but this, this is a little bit different, even though doesn't necessarily have to deal with Creative Commons. It's a way that you can certainly produce your Creative Commons. And just a note before we move on, that this guy, Christopher, also has a musician's guide first docbook draft. So he's got some, you know, some stuff about like docbook and things going on there too, which is kind of cool. Yeah, check it out, I guess, if you're interested. I guess let's move on unless you got something.
What's this? You got a story here about licenses.
Oh, the GNU licenses. Yeah, so we, back on the 12th, the last time that we did our show, which our notes said last week and wasn't. But we were. I was talking about how it was, or actually, I don't remember how much I was talking about it. I think I was talking about it. But I was talking to, I don't know if it was, I think it was the head Fonica guy. Yeah. Whichever one I've been emailing back and forth with one of the head Fonica guys. We're trying to get them on the show.
Yeah, I've been kind of so reading those as you go through, but you guys have been talking faster than I've seen them. So I'll come to work the next day, and I'll see you guys have already talked back and forth like three times by the time I got to work. So
they're Martin, Clemens, and Tommy are the three guys over at Head Fonica in Germany.
So you guys were talking about something that was related to this license, or?
Yeah, so, well, he, I sent out that email, because we're talking about doing a an Android app for the, or I'm talking, so there's two different lines of.
See, that's where I was getting confused, and that's what I mean. It's like, you guys are having some conversations where I'm like, am I supposed to be part of this?
so we're talking about getting them on for an interview, and then we're sort of having these side discussions about licensing, and the other sort of main topic is me trying to find them a Android, someone to develop an Android app, and potentially doing it myself once things slow down in my life. But anyway, the email that he sent me, he said he released as CCBYND, and he said no derivatives for details not being mixed up. Basically, this is a press release, and we don't want people to sort of be confused. This is not a work of art. So, you know, and of course, non-derivatives does not preclude uses of fair use. So, you know, he said no non-derivatives. And what I emailed back to him was that even though I don't like the non-derivatives, I understand why using that.
And you're saying for the actual software itself, he wants to use non-derivative.
No. I'm talking about, so the email itself, which is more or less a press release.
Oh, okay.
He was saying this email is its non-derivative. Just so, like, you know, it's got specific details about, you know, an event that he just doesn't want people to get mixed up by sort of editing it, you know, editing it incorrectly, you know. So it's not a work of art where you can sort of add and improve upon it. It's a work of law, you know. That's, I think, the way to think about it. That, and so that's sort of the way that the GPL is written. You know, the software is open source, but the license is not open source. You have to, you know, keep the license as is. But what the GNU project has is a, and this is what I suggested to him, was the GNU verbatim copying license. And I know, like, the Software Freedom Law Show, they use the Creative Commons attribution, no derivatives. But I think that just muddles the water. Like, I think that promotes using non-derivatives as Creative Commons. when you do the GNU verbatim copying license, you're sort of separating yourself out from the Creative Commons world, but you're still getting the exact same. I mean, the benefit of using the no derivatives is that people are familiar with Creative Commons and it doesn't look foreign to them. They know, you know, there is a large subset of people that sees dash nd knows what that means. There's not a large subset of people, of course, depending on how you define large. There's a smaller subset of people that would know what the GNU verbatim copying license is. What they say, what the FSA or what GNU.org suggests is that these are licenses for works of opinion or judgment. So, you know, if it's your opinion, then you don't want people sort of misrepresenting that, basically. You know, so that you don't want them muddling your quotes saying, Doug Whitfield said X. You know, you want that quote to be
I can
quote,
understand that. Basically. I mean,
yeah, so that's the
idea.
Here's
a question. This brings back my normal question or my usual question for non-derivatives. So does... And this could actually be kind of smart, too, in the sense that you're talking about a press release, or I could just be misunderstanding non-derivative again. But to do this, does this mean that they can't just show a snippet? Like, if they wanted to use this press release, like, on a blog, if somebody would they have to put the whole thing out there because it's non-derivative? Whereas you take a snippet of it and then post that on the blog, is that creating a derivative because you're using it out of context?
That depends, because the no derivatives doesn't preclude fair use. So if your snippet can be used under fair use, then it would be fine.
Okay. Oh yeah, because it would be an example that you're using it as. You're using it as a descriptive or for educational purposes.
Right. All of this stuff is muddy. I mean, I don't think there's any way around, you know, any way that copying things under the current system cannot be muddy.
Yeah, I've never really worked with the GNU licenses before. I've never really... And when you scroll down more on this page, there are a lot of different licenses for different things.
Yeah, the licenses of works of opinion or judgment are at the very bottom. But yeah, and then the other one that would sort of pertain to this show the most is licenses for works of practical use besides software and documentation.
That just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I guess they don't have one for, it doesn't look like they have one for like...
Oh, Yahoo has a license.
Yeah. There's some that are like the exact same thing. Like somebody came out with a license and called it, you know, the Doug Whitfield license, but it's really just the BSD license,
yeah.
You know, but I called it the Doug Whitfield license. I mean, some
of
them
are license.
Like that, but yeah, I mean, you can make one.
I should.
You know, they've got my favorite, the WTFPL on here.
That's true. And you have mentioned that one before.
Yeah. And they say their blurb here about it is, this is a free software license, very permissive and GPL compatible. That's their, but yeah, they don't have any art on here, which is kind of disappointing, unless art falls under the license for works of practical use besides software and documentation.
Well, I thought I saw one towards the top, or it might have just been music. It might not have been art.
Well, they have the Creative Commons ones on there, but it's under the heading of works of practical use, which I would argue that art is not of practical use.
So what you're saying is that musicians and artists may want to stick with Creative Commons instead of going for a GNU license.
Well, no, they have the Creative Commons licenses on there. This is
just a
list of everything.
I know, and it's really confusing to me. This whole site is laid out really weird.
They have the free art license. We've never talked about that on here.
Is that kind of like a... Oh, I see that. There you. I just happened to scroll by that when you said it. Wow. Nice going. Yeah, I've never seen that either. Is that more of just permits?
I've definitely seen it. It precedes Creative Commons by quite a bit. Yeah, because Creative Commons was founded in 2001. I don't know if that's when their first... Yeah, the first set of copyright licenses were released in December 2002. So it precedes Creative Commons by, at the very least, 2 years, and it could be bordering on three, depending on when in 2000, FAL. So it's older than that, and I think, I don't exactly know why, but it seemed to have gotten adoption in, like, software circles earlier than Creative Commons did. I don't know if it was just because I don't know. And that conjecture is probably something we don't need to go down too far. But I was talking to them about it, and we were talking about it for some reason. Well, we were talking about the freedomdefined.org/licenses and why not to use the non-commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about that. You remember the picture of the bug on there?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah. So, I had remembered when I was looking at this that I had somehow gotten to this licenses page. And I was talking about, God, I know where these licenses are. And so anyway, I found it.
Is that your thinking voice?
Yes.
Wow.
No.
Your thoughts are so angry sounding.
No, that's my frustrated thinking.
Oh, okay.
My voice when I am...
There's an old man keeping kids off of his lawn in your head.
Yeah, right, exactly. I talk very slowly when I'm thinking.
Mm.
Thomas, I do say...
Oh, God.
What do you think of this?
I don't like it at all.
That's my thinking voice. It's very aristocratic.
I see.
So, yeah. And it goes down a couple class notches once I get frustrated.
I hear you.
Start throwing shit.
And then that's when it becomes, where are those licenses?
Yeah, it's just, that's somewhere beyond. That's like when I'm hungry and frustrated.
It's a little village living in your head.
Yeah, it's fun. Anyway, since we mentioned that, and also because it came up in conversations after that episode, I thought we should throw it out there.
Yeah, and one of the things that we mentioned while we were doing this was I was saying that it's not really easy to follow. Well, it seems that good old ASCAP is at it again, and they have created their own page where they're trying to tell you how to understand Creative Commons licensing, in their words. Now, if you remember correctly, a few months back, ASCAP was sending out emails to their musicians asking them to help fund them to basically fight Creative Commons licensing. I don't remember the exact wordage of it, but there was a whole thing where he sent it out. Musicians were sending the emails to Creative Commons saying, hey, ASCAP is contacting us, asking for donations and telling us not to use Creative Commons license and telling us that it's bad. So you found a link where ASCAP is, it's called Common Misunderstanding. 10 things every music creator should know about Creative Commons licensing.
Well, I didn't find it so much as a guy posted it on Identica.
Gotcha.
Or StatusNet proper. And I was sort of brought in as the resident Creative Commons expert. So one guy posted it, and then another guy was like, hey, you should ask Doug. He knows about this stuff.
This is a pretty funny article.
So I clicked on it. Because this guy, the original post was, do we have a comeback to this or a response? Or, you know, he was just like throwing his arms up and ready to bring out the bullhorn, doing what you should have done at Bar Camp Madison. That's what he was ready to do. He was prepared for it.
Okay.
But I looked at it and I saw on there that it said fall, winter 2007. And so I sort of was like, is that just a link to the fall, winter 2007? Or is that when this was...
Oh, you're right. I didn't see that.
And then I saw up at the top that it actually is in the 2007 section.
So
my reason for bringing it up is, I guess, sort of twofold. One is his question originally was, you know, do we have a response? And initially I thought, well, that's a really stupid question. This was back in 2007. But it's really not that stupid of a question, because there could be 3 years later that we don't actually have a response, or not a legitimate one, or not one that is, you know, recognized by ASCAP. I mean, their letter this summer would suggest that, you know, if we responded appropriately and accurately to this, ASCAP didn't get the memo.
It's funny too, because what they did, and they think they're being smart here, but they're not, because it's kind of ridiculous, and it's kind of a boiled down way to show how they just are saying, using bad examples to say that, like, yeah, Creative Commons, don't do it. Like the very first one, they've, you know, right at the article, you can skip all of it and just look over to the right where they're explaining. They go, if you just bought a new car, would you trust a complete stranger with the keys? More likely, you would double click the alarm before leaving it parked in public. Okay, that's one of their ways of saying why you shouldn't go with Creative Commons. The thing is actually ASCAP is the complete stranger that you're leaving the keys with. You're going, hey, we're going to pay you money to tell people that, or, you know, to claim that you're going out looking for people who are using our music and to pay for it. Whereas Creative Commons, it's your car. You keep the keys. You don't give it to a stranger. You own it yourself. Nobody's out there doing it for you. You're doing it yourself. You have complete control of your own stuff. So right out of the bat, they're completely off base on what they're saying in this article. And I don't know if it's just because it was a 2007 thing and they were trying to figure it out themselves as they typed, apparently. But but I like how they boiled it down enough for me, whereas each section I can go, okay, here's what they're going to be saying about this one.
Yeah, the whole thing is so stupid. I mean, like, the prohibition of DRM number 9, we don't like DRM. I mean, like, it, you know, this is one of those...
Like, are they saying that Creative Commons is DRM? Is that what they're saying?
They're saying it's DRM-free.
Okay.
And oh my god, DRM-free stuff means don't pass go straight to hell. I mean, like...
Oh, so they're saying DRM is good.
Oh yeah, they are like...
Nice, I like that.
Getting... And then
this, like, was obviously before the rootkit thing that hit. What year did rootkit happen?
You're talking about the Sony thing.
Yeah,
right?
Sony rootkit, where basically you could just completely take over somebody's computer.
Yeah, I don't know when that happened.
Yeah, but yeah, all I know is DRM is a bad thing now, even though Apple still to this day is able to just kind of, people go, doesn't Apple have DRM? Yeah, they do, but it's all right. Oh, okay then. I mean,
they got rid of DRM.
No, they didn't. They still have it. You have the. I was just.
Well, they got rid of it in iTunes. They still have it on the iPad, but there's not DRM on iTunes.
I want to say just recently I heard that they still have it. There's the option to use DRM or to do like they have an option. I don't remember what it is, but I want to.
No, the ebook readers have DRM for the iPad and stuff. I don't think iTunes does. I don't know if that's really worth looking into, but if you think
it's just something I overheard. I mean, I'll look more into it myself. I may just be wrong, but I swear I just had a conversation with somebody about it.
But the statement Apple still has DRM is absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. That much is absolutely correct. I don't think it's true about iTunes, but it doesn't really matter in the end. This one, I just want to go over this last one, and then there's things after. It says they're talking about no authentication. Even if a creator doesn't want to submit his or her work to a CC license, someone else can.
Hmm?
Yes, someone else can also claim it's their work and say that it's all rights reserved. Yes, I wrote Toxic.
Yeah.
Britney Spears is performing my work. Yeah. You know, that's... I could claim that. Doesn't mean that it's legitimate.
Right.
And then underneath that is sort of their, like, we're summing it up. It says, under, you know, this is why that Creative Commons is not needed. Under U.S. copyright law, creators already have the right to waive their rights, give their works away for free, or permit the use of the music for sampling or mashups without necessarily giving up their ownership rights. They also have the right to say no to licensing their works for uses with they disagree on creative or other grounds. I don't know, like, what part of Creative Commons you can still do all of those. Like, Creative Commons is just packaging exactly what they just said.
And
so what this could say is Creative Commons allows creators to waive their rights, give works for free, or permit use of music sampling and mashups.
I have a...
Without giving up ownership rights. You can also have the right to say no to licensing their works for works for which you disagree on creative or other grounds. Now, on creative might be a little... That may not be true.
I'm confused, though, because if that's true, then how come ASCAP is always fighting with record companies when bands want to collaborate together and then they can't, like, they'll go in the studio, record something, and then they can't because of licensing laws against each other?
Well, I mean, that's because the record labels are, they've, like, the licenses, I mean, it's probably different in different situations because it's complicated, but I think a lot of times it's like Sony doesn't want their artist going with Universal, and the artist has signed over their copyrights to Sony and Universal, so they don't want to, like, get in bed together, and it probably just makes it difficult for ASCAP, and they're just like, man, how are we going to pay these guys, you know? It's like, I don't know, but, you know, I mean, this is kind of, I think what's frustrating about this is that it seems like maybe we haven't moved past this. But part of me just kind of doesn't even want to, you know, wants to sort of disregard its existence since it was 3 years ago. But people are still finding it and thinking it's new and being like, oh my God, ASCAP, what's up with them? So people might still be stumbling upon it and saying, oh my God, this Creative Commons thing is destroying America. It's like worse than the USSR. I mean, I don't.
Well, and people obviously are stumbling.
I'm surprised
upon
11
it.
Isn't it kills children. They probably edited that out in one of the drafts.
It does seem like a bit much.
But anyway, like I said, I didn't sort of discover it, and if I had just sort of discovered it, I think I would have disregarded it. But since it sort of came up as a legitimate issue, I thought maybe we should discuss why people still think it's a legitimate issue. And I think the answer is because sadly a lot of the things it brings up wrongly are still present.
And they're doing this stuff through propaganda, basically trying to scare people into, oh, you're never going to own your stuff if you do this, and everybody gets so what? You know, that is what it is, but you get to keep your stuff while other people are using it and exposing and building upon it and doing cool things with it. They try and scare you like you're going to get the plague if you. I can't find a good example. I'm trying to find a good analogy, but they're playing off of ignorance and trying to scare people into saying you're going to go poor or you're never going to make anything or someone's going to steal your works if you go this route. Whereas I truthfully don't believe ASCAP has my best interest in mind, and I would rather use something that's geared towards me owning it.
Yeah, but I mean, in the end, it's, you know, the artist's decision if they want to go with ASCAP.
By all means, yes.
I mean, unless ASCAP has a contract that says you can't release this as Creative Commons, I don't think there's any reason that you can't do both. I mean, you can absolutely dual license your stuff. It may just be that ASCAP won't accept your work because it could be getting played on places that they don't control.
That's an interesting point.
So I don't know, and you know, who knows?
Well, I had an interesting story then. Mine is a follow-up story. This is like page six, like, okay, we're not going to make as big a deal of this as we did the first time and kind of go under the radar so people stop paying attention to us. I went to Bandcamp the other day because I was looking and trying to figure out, let's see, how am I going to distribute my stuff?
Did you wear like a ski mask and or like a druid cloak or something so they wouldn't find out that you, Tom Rack, douchebag, would not?
Well, they
because you destroyed their company. I mean,
well, they implemented their 200 download thing, and then you had to pay to get other downloads. So I was actually, and this started like last week. So I was going to see how many downloads I'd already lost, and then this is when I saw something interesting. So on the statistics page, where it first said you have 200 downloads left, and then it would go down significantly as people were downloading the songs for free. So I was going to see how many I had, because I was just going to let it run out, and then after that just try and switch it over to a new method that I'm trying to figure out. What I found out was underneath the 200 downloads, it said you have 180 downloads left this month. And I was like, what? What does that mean? So I went to their blog and I went to the post where it said that, hey, they're going to be letting you only download 200 and then you have to buy more. Well, it seems, and this is the last thing on the article, Ethan Diamond, who created Yahoo Mail and then did this, decided to go the route after all of what everybody said, go the route of the Flickr business model, where you get 200 downloads a month now. And after that month, it resets to 200, depending on, you know, you go down, down, down. And then at the end of the month, your download limit goes back to 200. So you're technically not just getting 200 and that's it.
Oh, well, that's
not bad. I'm kind of okay with that. But it's funny the way that, like, they didn't make an announcement. This wasn't on a blog post. I just went there. Maybe they're going to later this week. I don't know. But I was there, and I'm just like, what's this thing? So I went back to that blog post. And at the very top, there's still the same blog post saying, hey, you can't, or we're changing to a download model. And all of a sudden, there's a link that says, for the update on this, click here. And it takes you to the bottom of the page where Ethan Diamond posted saying, thanks for the feedback, everybody. I mean, kind of a tail between my legs sort of thing, and realizing, like, crap, we got to do some backtracking. Yeah. He says, as suggested by several of the commenters, we're going to refresh everyone's free download credits every month, which I don't remember ever reading anybody say that. But if you have less than 200 downloads remaining, we'll bump you up to 200 again. So that's... that accomplishes their goal and cause, and that makes more sense, because that's what I was saying, is I was being hurt by the people that were getting 10,000 downloads and giving their stuff away for free, where it's like, well, why do I got to pay for that? And they were saying, no, that's what everybody was paying for before. I don't know. Their whole thing was confusing, somehow trying to justify that me paying for that is my own fault because of these people that were having successful downloads. And I was like, no, that doesn't make a lick of sense. And now this does. It's saying, oh, if you don't have people downloading more than 200 songs a month from you, then yeah, of course you shouldn't be paying for that. And I like that. So we'll see how this plays out. But I'm just curious if they're going to start charging for streaming. Because I would think that the streaming on the player takes way more bandwidth than downloads does, but who knows?
Oh, it should take, you just mean in total? Because, I mean, the stream should take exactly
right,
the same
amount
of bandwidth.
I think people will play the stream more than they would download an album, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I would think that it would, by sheer volume, is way more on the system than downloading files. That's just my think of the matter.
Maybe the thing, and I don't know.
And only have a small bit of knowledge of how the Amazon cloud computing storage works and the way that it's set up, but there's something to the effect that it's set up where it's better the more you use it, is what I'm hearing. Like, the more that people use it, the model changes as far as pricing goes. I don't know. I barely know anything about it.
Well, I mean, when you buy in bulk, a lot of times that's what happens. But, I mean...
But, yeah, so does this mean, do I forgive Bandcamp? I don't know yet.
I think you can forgive them
for now,
for not being dicks, but you can still hold them accountable for having for not having.
Well, what it's really taught me though is to make sure that you don't put all. I mean, I'm trying to find ways to be more self-sufficient in this, and I think that's really a smart thing to do. Is like, even though a service like this, and just like with Facebook and any other service out there. What it boils down to is that at any time they can just change the way they want to do crap. Just like Facebook said, okay, by the way, we're not doing the sidebar thing anymore. But this is different. And I was thinking about this earlier, is the reason that this is something that I was more passionate about is because it's not just a site that goes, it's our site, we can do what we want with it. The whole concept behind the site and the livelihood of the site is using your creativity to make them better. And that's what did it to me. The fact that it's like, our site exists because you create music and you're making us popular and we get a commission off of what you do. And if we just made a site that had music, we might not be as popular. We'd be another one of the 10 million Last.fm copycats, you know? So that's where this differs and why I thought that this wasn't okay, that they all of a sudden said, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. We're going to charge you. So... Whereas, like, with Facebook, when they change and everybody goes up in arms, it's like, yeah, too bad your free thing that really doesn't, you know, mean anything, has no real value whatsoever, is changing, or they change the style of it. Who cares? That's why I thought this was different.
Yeah, I hear you. Do you have anything else on that? I don't want to cut you off.
No. That was my short little rant. I went off.
Okay. So I have two things, just short. I want to throw them out to both you and the listeners. We haven't gotten any good DJ names submitted for you.
No, we have not.
So we need some submissions, listeners.
Yes. And I was just thinking the other day when I was sick that, yeah, we really need to finally get on. And because while I was sick, I actually started listening to Blip FM more because I was sitting around and didn't have anything to do. And didn't feel like doing anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would kind of look for music, and I was on Blip FM again. And I was like, oh, yeah, God, we got to do that DJ event that we keep talking about.
Well, you know, we keep talking about wanting to build some momentum for it, but I haven't really heard anybody say, hey, you know, when is this happening or anything? So maybe we haven't reached the
We'll have to just start posting more about it personally on our you know, microblogs.
Right, right. I had a quick question about that that I wasn't really clear on. So there's a lot of stuff that isn't on Blip. Are we only going to be doing Creative Commons music when we respond to each other, or is this going to be open to everything?
Open to everything. Okay. I don't think we'll at all be able to just only do Creative Commons stuff. I don't know how I would be able to tell.
We'd have to like upload it all ourselves.
Right.
And yeah, I think that's too big of a pain.
No, I say this is just a fun event where we're just going to play stuff.
Just want to check, make sure. So
in the true realm of being a DJ, we're just going to play the music we want and
And fuck the man.
Exactly.
Pirate radio. Were we going to like go out on a boat like outside of the, you know, the terrestrial FM zone and that's where we're going to play our Blip FM? I wonder if there's zones, probably not. And maybe we could go to Canada in the Great Lakes and like blast our submissions from Blip FM over to the States.
We could just go on one of the local Mary Kay boat rides.
Yeah.
that they have here, which is just a boat that basically goes in a circle around the lake in town.
And the other thing is, so I don't know if I talked to you about this like off line or I'm pretty sure I didn't do it on the show, but I was talking to Fab, Dan's partner on Linux Outlaws, and also I think GamerChick02 on Identica. I was talking to them, man, it's been 2 months now, I guess, and I just never had time to bring it up, I don't guess, but how they didn't know what manumit, like what that meant. So Fab is German, so he's off the hook, but GamerChick is from Michigan, so I don't really know. But, I think this is why I thought about it, is because remember how Castalis was like, you know, you should do it in your Telemundo voice. So my idea was that I would actually do our intro in Spanish. So I was like using Google Translate to try to figure out what Welcome to the Music Manual podcast was. But it would change based on like if I did manumit, that would be a different word if I put music with it than if I just did manumit. It made me think about the verb and where it would go in a sentence or. And none of that really matters, except that I don't know if, maybe in our logo or something, we should put something that makes it more clear what it is.
Okay.
Because Fab was thinking that, like, a manumit was like a mammal, like a marmot or something. And, you know, if people are thinking that when they see the show, then I don't know. Just something to think about. I mean, we have a domain. I don't know. I like the name just fine, but
I do too. Manumit means free from the bonds of slavery.
I know, but I mean, I guess. Oh, this is what was funny too is that GamerChick is apparently a history major. And I was like, okay, you're
funny.
From Michigan. I'm from the South.
Because
it's a little more.
It's an old English term. Yeah,
the slave sort of thing down in the South. Okay, I'm cool if you don't know what that word is. But then she said she was a history major, and I was just like, it's the same root as emancipation. Like, I don't know. Maybe we need to have a spinoff podcast. It's like the Creative Commons vocabulary podcast or something. We can have like a word of the week, and we can discuss the etymology of the word. And
there's a word of the day website.
Yeah,
There's a Creative Commons one too.
Oh man.
Or one that's under Creative Commons. Oh, this is something I found a while back. I'm gonna have to check my bookmarks for this, but I want to say that there's some sort of mashup word of the day / using the online dictionary sort of thing. I'll look it up. But
I've been
something
trying to
similar.
Theme my music podcast. You know, like my path of the show. And
yeah.
Like last week's was Pirates. So if you haven't listened to the or I guess earlier this week was released, was Pirates. So if you're into Pirates, or as we're recording earlier this week, probably a week ago as you listen to this. Timing on podcasts is also always difficult because you never know when people are going to listen to it.
This is true.
But anyway, if you like Pirates, you should listen to that. And actually, even if you don't like Pirates, I really like a lot of the songs. You know, sometimes
That was some of the more colorful music I've heard you post in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes I'm just like, I gotta pick some songs. I really like these bands, but I've already played, like, you know, 5 songs by this band. Here's one. They have an interesting name. I'll play that one. You know, but this week, like, I don't know. I really was into the songs that I played.
So, yeah.
So check that out if you think the music that I talk about and post are good. Because it's particularly awesome this week.
Okay.
But yeah, so I just wanted to mention that and just sort of, we can sort of stew about how presentation-wise or if there's anything we can really do to sort of help people. You know, they say don't judge a book by its cover, but everybody does. I mean, come on.
They do.
Nobody looks at a book with a red cover and is like, man, that is going to be an awesome book. But if you put a tiger on that cover, they're like, oh, shit.
Damn right.
Right? So maybe we need a tiger. So I don't know.
Maybe we do. So what it boils down to, yeah, okay. So I got to find a way to get that tagline in there.
Music Management and Tiger Podcast. we could have like a growl during our theme music. Like, man.
Or we'll just have a picture of a tiger breaking off of a pair of handcuffs.
Oh my god, that is so awesome!
No,
oh
it's not.
Man, that is, he could like be be like a jazz tiger with like some shades and a hat and a saxophone and like ripping out. Man,
I like how you said it could be like a jazz tiger. Like that's a normal thing. mean, like you know, one of those jazz tigers.
He's a cat, man. He's a cool cat.
Good lord.
Yeah, if I could draw, I would draw this, but I can't. So it would end up looking like one of those XKCD comics with like a tail.
It might not be a bad thing. It might be kind of interesting.
Tom, it would be terrible. I mean, I'll do it just to prove to you that it's going to be terrible. But
all right, well, I'll see if I could get on because of the two people that said this. I'll see if I can get on creating a design.
Well, I mean, I don't know. If you think that would help.
It might. It might not. I've never questioned it, but I've never had to. So
well,
I guess
that's all I'm asking you to do is question it.
Okay,
and
I will.
Maybe you'll be like Doug is an idiot, or really I thought it was cool. So you can be like Fab and Gamer Chicks are idiots. As long as I'm not an idiot, I'm really cool with whoever else you want.
All right, I'll just start adding people to that list.
Yeah, we should have a page on the site that says these are idiots, and we can just add people as we.
Right next to the DJ name page that we were going to make.
Yeah, two pages. These are cool people with DJ names. These are dumb people. I don't know. All right, Tom. I think we should close this up because...
Yep, that sounds good to me. I'm not sure where we were going to go any further with this anyway.
No.
So this has been the Music Manumit Podcast. Manumit meaning free from the bonds of slavery. Boom. There you go, Fab. So thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time at musicmanumit.com.